On this Sunday night, dead heat. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton now neck and neck. The key results of our new national poll, while the feud intensifies between Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Search for answers as the victims are remembered. Authorities step up the hunt for that doomed Egypt Air jet and its all-important black boxes. Terror target. Confirmation that the leader of the Taliban was killed in a U.S. drone strike, as we hear more tonight from a young American who joined ISIS. Call of the Wild, with Yellowstone's grizzly bears back in healthy numbers, the debate grows over whether they should still be called threatened. And Class of 2016, the inspiring story of a man who went from being the college custodian to college grad, beginning a whole new chapter at age 54. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. Our new NBC News Wall Street Journal numbers out today echo what many recent polls are suggesting. The race for the White House is tightening. Our poll has Hillary Clinton leading Donald Trump in a general election matchup by just 3 points. That's within the poll's margin of error. Trump and Clinton are also the most unpopular candidates in the history of our poll. 54% of voters have a negative opinion of Hillary Clinton, and 58% have a negative opinion of Donald Trump, which has analysts wondering tonight what voters will do if they're faced with two options they don't much like. Kristen Welker starts our coverage tonight.
The likely fall fight is shaping up to be a dead heat between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
There's no evidence he has any ideas about making America great, as he advertises.
Just bad judgment. She suffers from bad judgment.
NBC News Wall Street Journal poll shows Clinton leading Trump by only 3 points, down from 11 points in April, while another poll out today shows Trump beating Clinton by 2 points.
As we go through this campaign, we're going to be demonstrating the hollowness of his rhetoric.
Hillary is weak. She's a weak person.
Trump has surged, with many Republicans now rallying around their presumptive nominee, while Clinton is still locked in a primary fight, Trump invoking her Democratic rival today.
Bernie Sanders said she's not qualified to be president, and he meant it.
Bernie Sanders is showing no signs of letting up, campaigning today in California.
If you want the strongest candidate to make sure that Trump does not become president, we are that campaign.
While touting that he leads Trump by 15 points in our latest poll and capitalizing on both candidates' historically high unpopular ratings.
I don't want to see the American people voting for the lesser of two evils.
Is that how you would describe Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump, the lesser of two evils?
Well, if you look... No, I wouldn't describe it, but that's what the American people are saying.
Still, Clinton is keeping her sights on the general election, even rolling out a new apparent slogan today aimed at countering Trump's divisive rhetoric.
We are stronger together. We are stronger together.
Clinton also hit Trump today for telling the NRA he wants to end gun-free zones, which could include schools, a statement Trump tried to walk back.
I don't want to have guns in classrooms, although in some cases teachers should have guns in classrooms, frankly, because teachers are, you know, things that are going on in our schools are unbelievable.
Tomorrow, Trump will meet with Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, fueling speculation that he could be eyeing him for a possible VP pick. Meanwhile, Clinton and Sanders will campaign in California, the biggest prize left in the Democratic race. Kate.
Kristen Welker, thanks so much. We want to take a closer look now at some of the key findings in our poll, why the race has become so close, and how many voters don't like either Trump or Clinton. We're joined by our political director, moderator of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd. And Chuck, what does the poll tell us?
Well, Kate, I think the biggest way to look at these initial head-to-heads, when you look at it, essentially our first major general election test with at least one presumptive nominee and the other likely nominee, is that Republicans are rallying around Trump a lot faster than Democrats are rallying around Clinton. That's the easiest way to explain how a double-digit lead for Clinton last month is suddenly down to 3 points. But the other significant finding in this poll is this. As you know, both Trump and Clinton have unusually high unfavorable ratings. Well, get this. 1 in 5 of respondents in our poll have unfavorable views of both Trump and Clinton. This is the swing vote in this election, Kate. These folks are going to determine who's going to become president. And right now, most of them would like to see Bernie Sanders as president. And when you ask them which way do they lean now, a slight plurality lean Trump, but a good chunk of them prefer neither, none of the above, or a third candidate. What these voters end up doing will decide this general. Kate?
So interesting. Chuck, thanks so much. Overseas memorials today for some of the 66 victims of that Egypt Air flight that crashed into the Mediterranean Sea last Thursday, as authorities said an Egyptian submarine is now joining the search for wreckage and for the plane's black boxes. Bill Neely reports on the latest from Cairo.
The search for debris and answers is intensifying, but there's not much to show for it. Egyptian crews flying over the sea, a robot submarine searching under.
We have been recovering wreckage, we have been recovering human remains and other parts of the plane.
But there's no sign the life vests or clothing have helped investigators find the cause of the plane's disappearance. So the agony deepens for waiting families, for the father of the pilot, who called his son a hero. Pilot Mohammed Shukair had been promoted 4 days before. His voice calm as he spoke with air traffic control 2 hours before the crash.
25 Medevac Control, Leech 3804. Thank you so much. Good day. Good night.
The teams searching for the plane are focusing on an area 200 miles off Egypt, in water thought to be almost 2 miles deep, where the seabed is more like a mountain range. Finding the flight recorders in this before their batteries run out will be tough. A former Egyptian intelligence official believes the most likely cause is a bomb.
70% terroristic activity, 30% something wrong in the aircraft.
70%, it's terrorism.
Yes.
But a statement by ISIS yesterday said not a word about this plane. Investigators are focused now on data showing computer failures and smoke around the cockpit minutes before the plane disappeared. Egypt's president said today all possible causes are being examined and the investigation could take a long time. The airline told families finding and identifying the bodies could take weeks or much longer. Bill Neely, NBC News, Cairo, Egypt.
The U.S. is involved as well in the search for more wreckage from that Egyptian plane. And today, our correspondent Lucy Kavanaugh spent hours seeing that effort firsthand aboard a U.S. Navy P-3 Orion surveillance plane. She just returned and filed this report.
We're on board the U.S. Navy's P-3 Orion surveillance plane, flying just a mere 500 feet above the Mediterranean. Now, this American crew, their task today is to scour the waters of the Mediterranean about 90 miles south from where Flight 804 initially disappeared from contact. The P-3 aircraft is usually out there hunting for submarines, but this is a perfect aircraft for these search and rescue operations. That is because they can stay in the air an incredible 14 hours per one session. They also have this high-tech equipment on board, sonar, radio, as well as radar and video surveillance. And this technology can pinpoint almost any debris that they would potentially find below. But, of course, it really does come down to the human element. Eyes on the ground, these men scouring the waters below inch by inch, hoping to find something, anything at all, that can shed light on what actually happened to Flight 804 and the 66 people on board. These crew members were able to find today several pieces of debris that could be essential to the search, but for now, that search is still ongoing.
Lucy Kavanaugh from on board a P-3 plane. Confirmation today that the leader of the Taliban was killed this weekend in a U.S. drone strike. The attack took place in southwest Pakistan near the Afghan border. Secretary of State John Kerry said Mullah Akhtar Mansour posed a continuing imminent threat to U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Jim Mikleshevsky has more tonight.
This is what Hellfire missile strikes leave behind, a scorched, twisted hunk of metal that was once a vehicle, and the charred, mangled remains of its two passengers. U.S. officials are confident that one of those killed was Taliban leader Mullah Akhtar Mansour. The airstrikes occurred just inside Pakistan's southwest border with Afghanistan. U.S. officials tell NBC News that based on intelligence, audio intercepts, and overhead surveillance, both CIA and U.S. military drones launched multiple Hellfire missiles targeting Mullah Mansour. Locals claim, however, that one of the victims was an innocent taxi driver. Since Mansour took over leadership less than a year ago, the Taliban has been on a tear, stepping up its attacks against Afghan forces and seizing more Afghan territory. All this after the number of U.S. military forces in Afghanistan was dramatically reduced. Today in Myanmar, Secretary of State John Kerry suggested the U.S. strike that took out Mullah Mansour should be reassuring to the Afghan government and people.
This action sends a clear message to the world that we will continue to stand with our Afghan partners as they work to build a more stable, united, secure, and prosperous Afghanistan.
U.S. military officials have testified before Congress that security in Afghanistan is deteriorating, and it's not clear that the death of Mullah Mansour alone will reverse that trend. Kate?
Jim Mikliszewski at the White House tonight. Jim, thank you. We're getting more insight tonight into the dark world of ISIS from a young American who was drawn to the terrorist group. He later escaped, has been talking to the U.S. government, and now to NBC News. He spoke exclusively with our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel.
This is the first time the man we've been asked to call Only Mo has been allowed to tell his story to anyone outside the law enforcement system. His crime? He traveled to Syria to join and train with ISIS.
Was that your plan to immigrate, to live there for the rest of your life?
Yeah, that was my intention.
You thought it would be some kind of Islamic paradise?
Utopia, to an extent, yeah.
Mo, who grew up in New York City, seemed to have a promising future. At 23, he got into Columbia University, but soon he dropped out, started driving a cab in New York, and spending hours online watching extremist propaganda. By the summer of 2014, he took off and made his way into Syria.
So you went to this ISIS religious academy?
More like a camp. It was technically a Sharia camp, all in terms of war.
He says none of the students in class objected to what they were told. They were afraid to.
They had a license to do whatever. They had a license to kill.
Do people seem insane?
It's like a bloodthirst, I guess. People who just had a readiness for violence.
Did you see evidence of all the gore that we see in the ISIS propaganda?
I did see severed heads placed on spiked poles.
When did you decide that this wasn't for you?
When I saw how impossible my situation was, it felt urgently unsafe.
You can't just walk away, can you?
Exactly. I mean, desertion, in their perspective, is easily punishable by death.
5 months after he arrived, Mo managed to escape from Syria and went right to the U.S. consulate in Turkey. When he got back to the U.S., the FBI put him under arrest. And for the last year and a half, he has been working with the government. He now promises to spend the rest of his life speaking out against extremism. Richard Engel, NBC News, New York.
And Richard, we'll have much more on that story tonight in our special series On Assignment. That's at 7 Eastern. Paris was very much on edge this weekend after the crash of that Egypt Air flight that took off from Charles de Gaulle Airport. And there's been a feeling of unease ever since the terrorist attacks last November. This is how it looked last night at the stadium just north of Paris that was targeted by three suicide bombers. Heavy security ahead of a big soccer match there. Tonight, Tom Brokaw takes a look at how people in the city of Light are coping 6 months later.
On the surface, it all looks normal. It is anything but. 6 months ago, a homegrown terror cell unleashed a devastating urban assault. Mainly young people were the victims. They were enjoying the best of the city. In the immediate aftermath, Parisians were determined the terrorists would take nothing from them. But that resolve has been tested. Julian Pierce survived the massacre at the Bataclan Concert Hall.
Every day I think about it, and there's not a second that I'm not thinking about it. It's part of me now, so I have to deal with it.
Security guard Salim Tourabali, who stopped one of the suicide bombers from entering this stadium, has had to deal with his fear as well. He couldn't work for weeks. The Brussels attacks in March changed that. I had to show solidarity, he says. For French Muslims, a sense of solidarity has been hard to come by. At a gathering outside of Paris, student Nadia Kadashi had a message.
We are here to stand up, to speak up, and to say that we are as French as anybody else.
Now, 6 months later, France is still in an unsettled state. In fact, just this week, the French government extended the state of emergency for a third time.
U.S. Ambassador Jane Hartley sees progress here, closer ties to the United States.
The relationship between the two countries is stronger than it's ever been. There is a huge amount of not just friendship, but respect.
And the lore of the city remains. American writer Seth Sherwood, still living his dream job, sees it all around him.
Paris is still Paris.
Paris is still Paris. The energy is back. The vitality is back. The beauty and the history never left.
Paris has been through so much, but the city of light has never given in to darkness. Tom Brokaw, NBC News, Paris.
Still Paris. Still ahead tonight, the emerging battle over a great symbol of the American wilderness. Of all the wildlife in this country, none is more imposing than the grizzly bear. The population has made a comeback in Yellowstone National Park, and now there's a proposal to take them off the endangered species list. But as Ann Thompson reports, some believe that will put them at greater risk.
Yellowstone, home to America's safari, and its star attraction, the grizzly bear.
Oh, he's going to be walking behind the trees right about now.
After four decades on the endangered species list, grizzly numbers have gone from a low of 136 to more than 700. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wants to take the bear off the list.
There's just not really more room in the ecosystem to fit a whole lot more bears in here.
Frank Van Manen leads a federal government team that tracks grizzlies.
Back.
Using radio and GPS collars and aerial surveys.
From a biological perspective, I would say that the population is secure.
Tim Presso of Earth Justice has doubts. Earth Justice successfully sued to keep the bear on the list when the government tried to remove it in 2007.
Yellowstone is a wild place, and it's a glimpse of the great wild America that once existed. And the grizzly bear embodies all of that. That's a pretty special thing to roll the dice on.
Critics contend the Yellowstone grizzlies are an isolated population, and one of their main food sources, seeds from whitebark pine trees, have been decimated by climate change. Scientists say bears are adapting. Biologist Kerry Gunther says their menu contains 260 items of all sizes.
Well, this is a log that a bear ripped open to get at the ants and the ant nest of eggs inside.
Then there's the issue of hunting. If the bears are delisted, hunting will still be banned within the park. But the bears cross an invisible boundary into the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, spanning Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. Each state will have its own hunting plan.
If the bear is delisted, does that mean conservation efforts end?
No, certainly not. I think grizzly bears in Yellowstone are a conservation-reliant species.
An iconic creature of the wild that will still need man's help. Ann Thompson, NBC News, Yellowstone.
A sad note tonight, the passing of Jane Little, the Atlanta Symphony bass player we profiled right here on this broadcast back in March. Small in stature, Little was praised by colleagues for succeeding in a role traditionally reserved for men. She performed with the orchestra for 71 years, setting a world record for longest tenure. Jane Little spent her final moments doing what she loved. She collapsed on stage during an encore performance of There's No Business Like Show Business. She was 87 years old. And up next, college graduation for a man who turned setback into success. In this season of college graduations, one man's story stood out to us this past week. He's just earned his first bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering at the age of 54. But it's the unique path he took to get to this point that's most impressive.
For 8 years now, Michael Vaudrey has spent his days with classmates at Worcester Polytechnic Institute and his nights cleaning those same classrooms. Michael used to plaster houses, but when the recession hit, demand dried up. He and his wife, Joyce, lost everything.
It was really hard because I couldn't look my kids in the eye and tell them, you do a good job and work hard and you're going to be successful. I couldn't do that.
When Michael found the custodian job, he realized he'd make half as much money. But there was one big perk, free tuition.
I wanted just a glimmer of a chance to turn my life around and do something that I could look back on and say, hey, you know, that was pretty good.
In between classes, he studied in the custodial closet.
All I did was go to school, study, go to work, eat, and sleep.
I felt like I ran tackle for him, really. Yeah. I kept the distractions away.
Their sacrifices paid off. Last weekend, Michael walked with his class of 2016 alongside classmates 30 years younger, his graduation cap saying it all.
It was a spectacular day. I was walking on air. It was superb. It was so much better than I ever imagined it would be.
Congratulations.
Yes, it was a little hard to head back to work on Monday, but now he's hunting for a new job.
You know, with the help, support, encouragement of my fellow classmates and all my professors, well, they helped rebuild my American dream, you know, and now I dream again because of what they've done.
Michael's hoping to find work in the mechanical engineering field. We wish him all the very best of luck. And that is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be back in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 on MSNBC. For all of us at NBC News, good night.